Hi, Max Elbaum. Welcome to Cable.
Thanks, Bill.
Max Elbaum has been active in peace, anti-racist, and radical movements since the 1960s. He is the editor of the website Organizing Upgrade and the author of the book Revolution in the Air, 60s Radicals Turn to Lenin, Mao, and Che. Today, we'll be discussing first the two existential threats that we, humanity, and indeed much of planetary life faces. One is Trumpist authoritarianism, and the other is climate change that is accelerating on its way towards a climate cataclysm. After that, we'll discuss how can we, and that portion of humanity that thinks that our current economic system, capitalism, has brought us to the brink of political and economic disaster, environmental disaster, how can we defeat the threats? And let me let you in on a secret today. I think that we are building a powerful movement. It includes much of the Democratic Party that we must work with, more on that later, and at some point soon gain the power to create that other necessary, possible, sustainable, and democratic world. First, Max Elbaum, tell us about the threats and how serious are they, and then we can discuss how to defeat both threats, marginalize Trumpism, and rapidly reduce greenhouse gas emissions.
The threat of Trumpism, it's been building for many years. We've been in a 40, 50-year backlash against the gains of the 1960s. But it flipped over in the last 4 or 5 years as the reactionary forces in U.S. society, afraid of demographic change and the changing leftward impulses of the new generation, don't think even the rigged system of U.S. democracy, stunted democracies that existed, was going to be enough to sustain their rule. So there's a turn toward authoritarianism, and Trump was the vehicle for that. Behind the big lie about the 2020 election being stolen is a plan on their part to essentially have a coup in 2024. And the combination of voter suppression, legislation that gives more power to state legislatures to ignore whatever the vote was in their state, and other forms of manipulation are underway in as they try to impose what amounts to a neo-apartheid system. And it's no accident that the fossil fuel industry is one of the biggest supporters within the ruling class of the Trumpist bloc that's taken over the Republican Party, because they realize that the mass of people, especially young people, are opposed to their policies, want to see a serious battle against climate change, which means the end of dependence on fossil fuels and a very rapid motion toward renewable energy as the global source of energy, with this country playing an important role in that. Otherwise, the threat of climate change, we face a species catastrophe. The latest report from the UN shows that we do have a window within which we can mitigate some of the worst effects if we move decisively. But if humanity doesn't move decisively, we're going to see climate change is already here. It's already creating many, many problems, especially in the most vulnerable communities, but they will be qualitatively worse if we don't move, ending the dependence on fossil fuels.
Yeah, the UN-sponsored report of the world's climate scientists point out that if we don't do it in 10 years, we're likely to risk the creation of feedback loops so that no matter what humans did, no matter how much they cut their greenhouse gas emissions, warming the tundra and the Siberian permafrost and the Canadian permafrost and others will begin drying up, burning, and creating so much greenhouse gas emissions that the planet becomes uninhabitable over most of it. Hi, folks. This is Bill Resnick talking to Max Elbaum, who organizes and writes a lot. Find his work on the website Organizing Upgrade. We've just discussed the great threats that we face in climate roasting and in Trumpist authoritarianism. So, Max, what is to be done? How do we deal with the threats to marginalize Trumpism and take the completely doable steps to stop global warming? How might we in the coming struggles build a contending left party and build left movements? Let's start in the last big election. Trump versus Biden and the congressional election, some of us argue that the radical left must urge a vote for Biden, indeed maybe work to get out the vote and be quite adamant about that. But comrades on the left say that's folly, it will be disastrous. Tell us what they argue, that is our comrades on the left, that we should not be involved, have nothing to do with the Biden administration, but critique them, and in fact, just work to build the movements. Tell us about them, and how do you respond?
Well, the starting point is what the principal polarization in the country is today. And the main polarization in the country is between the Trumpist bloc, which has taken over the Republican Party and used it for their agenda. It's their political instrument. And their agenda is all wealth to the wealthy, continue the fossil fuel industry, and impose a two-tier, go back to the period of Jim Crow. And the fervor in that section of the population is built up by the sense that the demographics in the country are changing, and white Christian America is in danger of civilizational overthrow, or the great replacement, as Tucker Carlson puts it. And there's a much broader coalition, a majority of people against that agenda, but the majority, the anti-Trump, the anti-authoritarian agenda is divided around what kind of society we should live in. If we do manage to defeat the ethno-nationalists, the white nationalists, and the authoritarians, and it's a broad range. It goes all the way from anti-Trump Republicans to the mainstream of the Democratic Party to the resurgent progressive wing, which was manifested especially in Bernie's campaigns. And then there are various revolutionary and anti-capitalist forces within that progressive bloc. So the country's at an inflection point. Mike Davis called it, we're in trench warfare. It's stalemate between the two sides right now, because although the anti-Trump forces are the majority, the Trumpist bloc is united. They have resources. And because of the skews in the way the system is structured, they control the Supreme Court. They control the state legislatures in a majority of states. And with voter suppression and the racist biases in the Electoral College in the Senate, they have a disproportionate advantage. So if you're going to beat them, you need a combination of strategies that include the electoral arena, protecting the elections, and then implementing an agenda that starts to serve the majority of people and begins to break up the allegiance of some of the sectors to the Trumpist coalition. The idea that you can do that without defeating them electorally is simply a non-starter within the way this country is structured and what the vast majority of people think is how you do politics. So in the 2020 elections, the forces that threw down against Trump had a three-lap strategy, which was defeat Trump electorally, then protect the results, which included mass action in many states. Tremendous stories out of Michigan and Pennsylvania of what they had to do to put pressure post-election on the electoral officials, some of whom were Republicans, and then fight for a progressive agenda to make sure that the Biden administration would give enough to the working class and the oppressed peoples so that we had something to offer and we could start the country on a new progressive trajectory. That same situation, I think, applies in 2022 and 2024. And the history of revolutionary movements and radical reform movements is that those who gain influence when you're in a period facing authoritarianism or fascism or some variant are those who put themselves forward as the most resolute opponents of that threat and win the most credibility, fight alongside the majority of people who are opposed to it. And those who stand aside from one or another aspect of that struggle get isolated and lose their credibility. So the section of the left that gained in 2020 was the section that threw themselves into the electoral arena, the state power building groups around the country, the unions like Unite Here. They gained influence with the most thoughtful and combative sectors of the working class and communities of color who see Trump as an existential threat. If you stand aside from that and you say it's not good enough, you lose your credibility. It doesn't build the left and it doesn't defeat the right.
Some of our comrades, though, argue a different history than you've pointed out, that every time we get involved with the Democratic Party and get involved in electoral politics, what happens is, and I think, in fact, that sometimes has happened, not this time, you can tell us why, but when we do get involved in elections and endorse a Democrat or even work for him, we get passionately involved in the results of the election and go along with this least common denominator politics that don't frighten the middle sectors of the electorate who are sort of independent and go either way. And ultimately, we lose our own political identity and we lose our capacity to influence others. My sense is that we can be autonomous from the party and especially the party elites and do not have to give up our politics, but at the same time struggle against authoritarianism and struggle for a climate policy that's equal to the threat.
Yeah, well, there's no guarantees when you engage in broad coalition politics. Sometimes you're the hunter and sometimes you're the dog. Sometimes you get the prize and sometimes you lose the prize. So there's no guarantee that participating in a broad front with people who are your strategic enemies, but you might be allied with them for some immediate reason, that's tricky terrain to navigate. And there's absolutely no guarantee that the left comes out on top in that situation. The problem is that there's no other way to do serious politics. The plant the flag position that just says, you know, we plant the flag and the masses will come to us if only we differentiate ourselves from everybody else. That has not worked in U.S. history or in global history. Every successful revolutionary reform movement or radical reform movement has dealt with coalition politics in terms of its own country and its specifics. The trick is how you do that. Do you do that in a way, like you said, where you just tail and you have lowest common denominator politics and you don't put out your own messages and build your own strength in the course of that coalition politics? Or are you successful in being able to engage in coalition politics and building up your forces along the way? That's the challenge. And what's new about the situation today, as opposed to the elections over the last 30 or 40 years, is that there are all kinds of institutions on the left that are doing exactly that, that have thrown themselves into the electoral arena and have learned some skills about how to play the electoral game where the lists, the contacts, the finances don't all just go into the official Democratic Party structures, but go into independent structures. So there's a whole range of formations that have developed in the last 10 or 12 years in states, Lucha in Arizona, New Virginia majority in Virginia, New Florida majority that's now Florida Rising, Texas Organizing Project, New Georgia Project. There's a host of those, as well as formations like Our Revolution that came out of Bernie's campaign or the Working Families Party, Progressive Democrats of America. They're building up their own operation in the course of the struggle against the right. And they're the ones who gained the most influence in 2020 and came out of it with initiative. And you've seen that change in the Democratic Party now. I mean, the fight in the Democratic Party that's taking place in Congress as we're doing this show, Bill, it's not between Bernie and Biden. Bernie and Biden are aligned. It doesn't mean they completely agree, but they're aligned against the, you know, Kristen Sinema and Joe Manchin in the Senate and that small caucus of right-wing Democrats. So the left, it's not an accident that Bernie is now the chair of the Senate Budget Committee, because the left has built up its independent strength and because the Biden people realize that for their own reasons, both what they worry about Trumpism and their efforts to retain U.S. global hegemony, it's for good reasons. It's not all for the same reasons we do, but they realize that some big changes need to happen. They believe in science. They don't have the same approach to climate change the way that we do, but they're not climate change denialists, and they understand that there is a civilizational crisis about that. So we have to fight with them about how you approach it. But the difference between them and the climate change denialists is a big difference. And that's what's created a shift in the balance of forces. So there's no guarantee that we're going to come out ahead. U.S. history is, like you said, it's littered with cases where we needed a broad alliance to beat the Confederacy in the Civil War. We needed a broad alliance to beat the fascist current in the 30s. And we needed a broad alliance to beat the people who wanted to maintain Jim Crow in the 60s. And after those things, of course, our erstwhile allies in those fights came after the left. And for various reasons, because of the balance of forces and because of the situation and some of the mistakes of the left, we got beat each of those times. But had we not engaged in those coalitions, the country would be even worse shape than it is in now. And the question is, can we do better this time? Can we build up our strength in the course of that fight against the right in a way that when we emerge from that fight, we are here to stay and we have influence and we have credibility because we've played a role in defeating the right? If we don't play a role in defeating the Trumpists, we're not going to have credibility coming out of this struggle if they do get defeated.
Yeah. In addition, this is a different era for the planet, it seems to me. I'm not going to ask you to reply to that, but capitalism, it seems to me, is basically finished. We cannot continue with an economy of continuous exponential growth. It seems to me our program is, in fact, the program of the Progressive Caucus. It's quite an amazing shift, it seems to me, in Democratic Party politics that's occurred. And I think we're converging on our area of the left is converging with lots of people on the Democratic caucus. It seems to me the program for dealing with climate change requires a mobilization of all of our resources to create a wholly different energy system and a productive system in this country. Hi, folks. This is Bill Resnick talking to Max Elbaum, who has been active in peace, anti-racist, radical movement since the 60s. He organizes, he writes. You can find his work on the website Organizing Upgrade. And he authored the book Revolution in the Air, 60s Radicals Turned to Lenin, Mao, and Che in its third edition now. We've just discussed the great threats that we face in climate roasting and in Trumpist authoritarianism, and also how we must work in politics with the Democrats to keep the radical right from power, but of course work with them in ways that we don't lose our autonomy or our political visions. So Max Elbaum, that's just part of the battle. The other part is building movements, perhaps not identifying themselves as socialists, but movements that fight for changes in policy and the rules of the game, how we deal with the environment, how we ensure that workers at every level gain a family wage, how we stop global warming, as well as now an arms race with China that the military-industrial complex is ginning up. What do you see as the left role in organizing, especially when a majority of the radical left that seems to me work with and organizations that fight global warming? And in the issue of global warming, like Extinction Rebellion, 350.org, the radical people in it, the climate mobilization, we're working in, it seems to me, every area of combat in U.S. politics. Do you see that kind of work working in those movements as important?
Absolutely. Rebuilding the labor movement, strengthening the institutional strength and militancy of the anti-racist movements. You mentioned the war with China, the threats of that conflict right now, the struggle for peace. That's our weakest area in terms of the progressive movements, and it's our area of the biggest conflict that we have with the Biden administration. Because on almost all the so-called domestic issues, the Biden administration has made concessions to the left. But part of the reasons they're making those concessions is they want to retain U.S. global hegemony, and they're even advertising and trying to promote some of the positive domestic changes on the grounds that it'll put us in a better position to have a conflict with China. We'll have more soft power in the world, we'll be stronger and all that. So we have some bitter fights ahead, and we're not going to hold elected officials accountable. We're not going to be able to get what we need programmatically solely through the electoral process. We have to push. And that takes social movements. We're talking now in October. There's a strike wave going on. There's all kinds of formal and informal worker militancy right now. There have been a spate of articles in the last few weeks about the number of workers who are just quitting and walking off their job, basically going on strike, of unorganized workers. They don't have union representation, but they're fed up. And labor has some bargaining power that it didn't have previously. So every one of these movements has to be expanded, has to find ways to both broaden as well as connect with one another and find a way to use some of the influence that was gained. I mean, a lot of the left turned to electoral politics, partly out of the need to defeat the right. But the other motivation was that some of the traditional institutional structures of the left were not able to get to scale. And the labor movement is traditionally the main site because that brings people together across racial lines, across other socioeconomic lines. But the labor movement was not in a position to play the kind of role that, of course, people on the left who have working class politics wanted to play. And the electoral arena pushes you in the direction of trying to make connections and find coalition because you have to have a program that can appeal to the majority of people in your district. But that's not a panacea. That's just one front that we have to engage in. So rebuilding the social movements, I mean, we have a lot to learn. You mentioned a number of the important groups fighting on those issues, the Sunrise Movement, the sit-in that they did at Pelosi's office that AOC supported, that changed the dynamic around climate change. You know, all of that is absolutely necessary. The fight in Alabama to try to unionize, beginning the unionization of Amazon. There's a big Teamster election going on right now. And one of the issues is, will the Teamsters throw down and be involved in organizing Amazon? So, you know, the head of Amazon is not a friend of the Trump administration, but he's not a friend of the working class either. So I'm optimistic, too. Bill and I grew up about 10 blocks from each other. So maybe there was something in the Milwaukee air that gave us both this hope. We also lived through the time where there were huge, Bill and I were talking just before the show, Alice Chalmers, A.L. Smith, places that employed 10,000 workers at a time. And we were inside those. I worked at a forklift place. Bill worked in a steel place. You know, you got to see the potential power of the working class and grew up in a time when of optimism, the utopianism of the 60s. So that's imprinted on us from our generation. But we don't underestimate how tough it's going to be. Our enemies are ruthless, and not just our enemies in the Trumpist camp. So we have to learn to play the hardball politics. It's, you know, it's a messy game. There's no guarantees, but you fight and you make a difference in people's lives. And if you persist, the moral arc of the universe will bend your way, but it doesn't bend by itself.
Hey, and doing that fighting is fulfilling and pleasurable of itself. What else should we be doing nowadays in this imperiled world and feeling solidarity with so many people? Max Elbaum, thanks so much for talking to us today.
Thank you, Bill. Nice to talk about Milwaukee and the class struggle. What could be better?